go on to the next case of the day, which is In Re Adoption of Micah H. Justice Frydenberg will be joining the court for this case and the remaining cases of the day. And is it Ms. Yocum?
Yes, good morning, Your Honor.
Good morning to you.
Members of the court, good morning. My name is Jennifer Yocum. I appear on behalf of the appellant, Tyler R. And just to give a brief introduction, this case originally was heard by this court back in 2016, albeit with a much larger audience in Norfolk. And this case was sent back to the county court on two issues, namely whether active efforts were used by the guardian grandparents to unite the biological father with the child, and whether abandonment was shown by a standard of clear and convincing evidence as opposed to the standard that had been used by the court below at the original trial. This case involves a 10-year-old boy, Micah H., who went to live with his, has lived with his grandparents, his maternal grandparents, for most of his life. And at some point, my client had committed a crime and ended up in the state penitentiary.
Client been adjudicated the father? There's been a paternity adjudication in district court, correct?
That's correct. There was a district court action, Judge,
and child support ordered.
Child support ordered.
Is there anywhere in our record consent for adoption from the district court in this case? And does it matter?
Well, yes, it does matter. As the court is well aware, adoption is a product of statute. There was no adoption at common law, and the framework for adoption requires consent by all of the courts that have, or parents that have connection or control over the child. So at the original trial back in 2015, the appellee's counsel submitted basically the entire district court record. Now, there was an amicus brief filed in this case who raised some issues of the insufficiency of the consent by the district court. Essentially, it was almost a one-liner, this court gives its consent for leave to adopt. We're dealing with an unwed father here. So basically, if I read the amicus argument correctly, the requirement of the district court was to have a hearing on if they found any of the factors under 43-104-22. There's nothing in the record to show that, and I wasn't part of that case, nothing in the record to show that any of that was any evidence adduced on any of those factors, and there's no finding. So it very well may be a case that there is no jurisdiction to even entertain this matter. That's basically what the order said. Petitioners are granted leave to adopt. So it should be in the record. It would be contained within Exhibit 12, and there was the entire district court record was contained in there. As well as, and I guess I'll just jump to some of the we briefed 5 points of error, and some of them deal with irregularities of the actual adoption procedure. One was there was no final adoption hearing. What the court did When this went back on remand, the court considered, set the trial to consider the two remanded issues and gather additional evidence per the instructions of this court on the active efforts issue and to apply the correct standard to the abandonment issue. And the trial was held on December 1st of 2017. The court's decision, court issued a written ruling after hearing, basically terminating my client's rights and then granting the adoption, and then issued a decree about a week later, which, by the way, was right before the court, that particular judge had retired. So there was no, what we know as final adoption hearings. I myself do many adoptions, and we always have the hearing with a child, all the consents, all those things were absent.
So what is missing here?
We're missing the home study, which arguably the court could have waived because the grandparents, the statute as it read that time provided that the court could waive the grandparents' home study. We're missing a final hearing with the presence of the child who was under the age of 14.
Does the child have to be present for all of the hearings, or if the child was present at part of the hearing, is that sufficient?
Well, Judge, I would maintain it was a bifurcated hearing. I think there's good reason to bifurcate the hearing if you're going to talk about a subject like abandonment and have a trial on it, and the trial lasted a day. So I don't think you want a young child listening to perhaps some of that evidence. But clearly it was bifurcated, and the statute does say that the child shall be present if the child's under 14. And again, going back to the statutory framework, and there is no...
Can that be waived by the judge?
There's nothing that allows for it in the statute.
So what is the consequence if that, for example, was not done?
I believe that the decree should not have entered. Perhaps it could be remanded for a final hearing. But then it gets back to the issue that we raised of lack of due process for my client, because under this court's decision in Madison S., they distinguish between a private adoption and an adoption where the child was awarded the state and there was a termination of parental rights hearing. Justice Wright indicated that because the issue there was there a final appealable order that the court had jurisdiction over, of course. So this court said was, listen, in a private adoption, a parent's right is not terminated until the decree. And they're given the opportunity to present evidence on best interests of the child. That whole procedure was lost here, and he was not given that opportunity.
What due process was missing to your client in this process?
Well, it involves his child. There was no hearing, so there was no notice given. And, of course, the right to your children, which is...
have a right to confront all of the witnesses who talked about best interests, did he not?
Actually, not at the bifurcated hearing. In fact, we tried to adduce some of that evidence in the first hearing. I briefed that, and it's also contained in Exhibit 12. I started off and I asked him, are you contesting this proceeding? Yes, I don't believe it's in my child's best interest. There was an objection. It was sustained, and we were told we were not addressing best interests. So I maintain that we've never had that hearing or the opportunity to present that evidence. Moreover, our guardian ad litem, he presented, the last hearing was very odd because prior to the hearing, the court advised counsel that he was going to call the guardian ad litem. The guardian ad litem testified that he believed that terminating Tyler's rights was going to be in the child's best interest. But on a cross-examination, he said that it was all based on what he had heard at the trial. He had never met the child, hadn't talked to the petitioners except for exchanging pleasantries. And I believe he believed his role was solely after a finding of abandonment, which had not occurred yet, to offer the substitute consent that was necessary. So if there are no further questions, I would ask that the court remand with instructions to deny the petition. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Novotny, good morning to you.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Mike Novotny, and I represent appellees Linda and Dan H., who are the maternal grandparents and parental guardians of Micah. Linda and Dan respectfully ask this court to affirm the Saunders County Court decision in full, which properly followed the directions of this court on remand. The lower court correctly found that there was clear and convincing evidence to find that Linda and Dan provided reasonable and active efforts under the circumstances to reunite Tyler with Micah, and that Tyler abandoned Micah for at least a period of 6 months preceding the filing of the complaint for termination and adoption.
Where should the determination of abandonment be?
Well, that's an interesting question because that, first of all, the critical period, the case law suggests that the critical period is 6 months preceding. This case presents a unique situation where the complaint was filed in September of 2014, but Tyler was incarcerated he was incarcerated in February of 2012. And has since been in the state penitentiary. This issue was discussed in oral arguments at for Henry Madison, and so the court considered in that oral argument was whether or not the period while he was incarcerated counted toward basically the clock, and. But this situation is different than Henry Madison because Tyler had abandoned Micah for at least a year. Well, there's testimony from Linda that says that Tyler's last face-to-face visit was in May of 2013, and so that would have been more than 6 months preceding his2011. So that would have been at over 6 months preceding his incarceration. However, Tyler said that his last face-to-face visit was at least a year. And so out when he was free, and as the county court recognized, that when Tyler was free, he never even had a face-to-face visit with Micah for that six-month period. But then also, Tyler was incarcerated in 2012, and so he never had any visits with him. He wrote letters, maybe.
I understood Justice Lee's question that the correct court determined.
Sure
I heard it. Did the correct court, county or district court, determine whether?
Yes, county court did, and because this court had determined when the case was decided in 2016 that the petition was filed, consent was filed under 43-1042B, which provides that the court which makes that determination is the one which the complaint was filed. So that was the county court, as opposed to 292.
Father, adjudicated to be father out of wedlock.
Yes, because the in 2008, the paternity rights for that father were determined, and that's when the those rights were determined in 2012 by, or 2008 by the district court, and then the complaint was filed in 2014 at the county court.
In a separate matter?
Yes, correct.
Has the district court determined the name?
Yes, and that, well, they gave the consent of entering in the adoption, which appellant said was in Exhibit 12, which was incorporated into the county court's decision.
That, I understood, I've not had an opportunity to review that. I'll look for it in the exhibit.
Okay.
But I understood counsel to say that it was just the standard one-liner.
Mm-hmm.
Addressing consent. Was there anything in that order that addressed abandonment? Or is it your position that that was just implicit in the consent?
That was implicit in the consent, and then that was incorporated into the county court's decision. And then, so the next issue is whether or not, so if we don't have any more questions on abandonment or active efforts, I'd like to move on to the due process analysis that the appellant raises. Appellant raises that the due process wasn't provided because they didn't have notice. Notice is the best interest analysis, and best interest is defined in NICWA in the definition section, which is 1503. I believe it's subsection 3 or 4, but best interest is defined as compliance with the standards in NICWA. And so once the active efforts and all of the requirements within NICWA were satisfied, then the appellate should have had notice that that the best interest could have possibly been found. Additionally, as appellant raises, the county court also determined, also gave notice at the hearing back in December 1 of 2017 that the guardian ad litem was going to be called. The guardian ad litem was called. The appellant had an opportunity to cross-examine. The cross-examination occurred, and then the appellant had an opportunity to brief the best interest issue and did not raise those best interest analyses and only raised it for the first time on appeal. So we believe that the due process was satisfied, and the arguments that the case law that was provided by appellants was only for Meyer versus Nebraska, which is a First Amendment case, and then also they analyzed under Troxel, but Troxel was an issue of whether or not there was visitation, and so we believe that the due process analysis fails. And then I would
In what capacity? Maybe that's not the right way to pose the question. Did the guardian ad litem testify as a fact witness?
The guardian ad litem. So I wasn't an attorney at that, but from what I can tell from the record, is that the guardian ad litem, page 12 and 13 of the transcript of the December 1 hearing, the county court flagged the issue for both parties that he was going to have the issue, the guardian ad litem testify for the procedural issues, because as he said that this has been a well-trod issue and he didn't want the case to come back on remand for a procedural. And
well,
so he wanted
to figure out kind of what hat was the guardian ad litem wearing.
Yeah,
advocating or representing the child, or as an expert who knows all about best interests, or someone familiar with the underlying facts?
He was testifying, I believe, from what I can tell, as representing the best interests of Micah. And And so he testified, and in my brief, I, you know, put a section of his testimony that specifically deals with his best interest testimony. And I think that it's pretty plain that he was testifying in the respect for best interest of Micah at that point.
Was there other testimony or evidence of best interest of the child in the record?
Yeah, and that's a great question, because that's where it overlaps with the NICWA analysis and ICWA analysis, because the compliance with NICWA and ICWA is part of the best interest of the child, because ICWA provides a heightened standard for adoption when it deals with an Indian child. ICWA does, and then NICWA provides an even higher step based on the legislative amendment after Baby Girl, which provided the heightened standard which the previous case dealt with. So those fact issues do overlap. And then I would also request that the court, when the...
Arthur, before you sit down, there are a couple of items about no report being done by Health and Human Services, the child not being present, at least for the entire proceedings. Are those flaws in the adoption process, and if they are, what should this court do about them?
Well, we don't believe so. First of all, with the presence issue, I could not find any case law that specifically deals with Section 108 that interpreted that provision, 43-108. And so we believe that the court did waive that issue. But Micah, he's here today, and we believe that any issue would be easily cured if the court does determine that that is an issue. I mean, have a hearing, he's present. I don't, shouldn't prevent stability in his life that he deserves. And then the second issue is the home study issue. Micah, he's almost, in a couple of days, he's going to be turning 11 years old. And he has been with the grandparents physically in their house living for 10 of those 11 years. And the background issues were analysis was done during the guardianship, and the appellate did not
say. Is that in our record?
The background, yeah, because it's part of the application for Medicaid, and it also was determined by the Department of Health and Human Services. The appellant didn't stay the lower court decision, and so before she appealed it, the Department of Health and Human Services issued a birth certificate that showed Linda and Dan as the legal parents, and that the home study is really for their protection, and they determined that they're based on the information that they received from the county court that that there was sufficient facts for that would supplement the home study, that it wasn't needed.
A home study prior to adoption?
Correct. So if the court doesn't have any questions, we respectfully request that the court uphold the lower court's decision in full. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Is there any time for rebuttal? There is no time for rebuttal. The next case of the day is State